Chapter 127. Closing in, the place in Lincolnshire has shut its many eyes again, and the house in town is awake. In Lincolnshire the deadlocks of the past doze in their picture frames, and the low wind murmurs through the long drawing room, as if they were breathing pretty regularly. In town the deadlocks of the present rattle in their fire-eyed carriages through the darkness of the night, and the deadlock Mercuries, with ashes or hair powder on their heads, symptomatic of their great humility, loll away the drowsy mornings in the little windows of the hall. The fashionable world tremendous orb, nearly 5 miles round, is in full swing, and the solar system works respectfully at its appointed distances. Where the throng is thickest, where the lights are brightest, where all the senses are ministered to with the greatest delicacy and refinement, Lady Dedlock is. From the shining heights she has scaled and taken, she is never absent. Though the belief she of old reposed in herself as one able to reserve whatsoever she would under her mantle of pride is beaten down, though she has no assurance that, what she is to those around her, she will remain another day, it is not in her nature, when envious eyes are looking on, to yield or to droop. They say of her, that she has lately grown more handsome and more haughty. The debilitated cousin says of her, that she's beauty no set-up shope of women, but rather alarming kind remitting man-fact inconvenient woman who will jet it off but and with stolishment Shakespeare. Mr. Tulkinghorn says nothing, looks nothing. Now, as heretofore, he is to be found in doorways of rooms, with his limp white cravat loosely twisted into its old-fashioned tie, receiving patronage from the peerage and making no sign. Of all men he is still the last who might be supposed to have any influence upon my lady. Of all women she is still the last who might be supposed to have any dread of him. One thing has been much on her mind since their late interview in his turret room at Chesney Wold. She is now decided, and prepared to throw it off. It is morning in the great world, afternoon according to the little sun. The Mercuries, exhausted by looking out of window, are reposing in the hall, and hang their heavy heads, the gorgeous creatures, like overblown sunflowers. Like them too, they seem to run to a deal of seed in their tacks and trimmings. Sir Leicester, in the library, has fallen asleep for the good of the country over the report of a parliamentary committee. My lady sits in the room in which she gave audience to the young man of the name of Guppy. Rosa is with her, and has been writing for her, and reading to her. Rosa is now at work upon embroidery or some such pretty thing, and as she bends her head over it, my lady watches her in silence. Not for the first time today. Rosa. The pretty village face looks brightly up. Then, seeing how serious my lady is, looks puzzled and surprised. See to the door. Is it shut? Yes. She goes to it and returns, and looks yet more surprised. I am about to place confidence in you, child, for I know I may trust your attachment, if not your judgment. In what I am going to do, I will not disguise myself to you at least. But I confide in you. Say nothing to anyone of what passes between us. The timid little beauty promises in all earnestness to be trustworthy. Do you know, Lady Dedlock asks her, signing to her to bring her chair nearer, do you know, Rosa, that I am different to you from what I am to anyone? Yes, my lady. Much kinder. But then I often think I know you as you really are. You often think you know me as I really am? Poor child, poor child. She says it with a kind of scorn, though not of Rosa, and sits brooding, looking dreamily at her. Do you think, Rosa, you are any relief or comfort to me? Do you suppose your being young and natural, and fond of me, and grateful to me, makes it any pleasure to me to have you near me? I don't know, my lady, I can scarcely hope so. But with all my heart, I wish it was so. It is so, little one. The pretty face is checked in its flush of pleasure by the dark expression on the handsome face before it. It looks timidly for an explanation. And if I were to say today, go, leave me, apostrophe I should say what would give me great pain and disquiet, child, and what would leave me very solitary. My lady, Have I offended you? Nothing. Come here. Rosa bends down on the footstool at my lady's feet. My lady, with that motherly touch of the famous Iron Master Knight, lays her hand upon her dark hair and gently keeps it there. I told you, Rosa, that I wished you to be happy, and that I would make you so, if I could make anybody happy on this earth. I cannot. There are reasons now known to me, reasons in which you have no part, rendering it far better for you, that you should not remain here. You must not remain here. I have determined that you shall not. I have written to the father of your lover, and he will be here today. All this I have done for your sake. The weeping girl covers her hand with kisses, and says what shall she do, when they are separated? Her mistress kisses her on the cheek and makes no other answer. Now, be happy, child, under better circumstances. Be beloved and happy. Ah, my lady, I have sometimes thought forgive my being so free, that you are not happy. I. Will you be more so, when you have sent me away? Pray, pray, think again. Let me stay a little while. I have said, my child, that what I do for your sake, not my own. It is done. What I am towards you, Rosa, is what I am now, not what I shall be a little while hence. Remember this, and keep my confidence. Do so much for my sake, and thus all ends between us. She detaches herself from her simple-hearted companion and leaves the room. Late in the afternoon, when she next appears upon the staircase, she is in her haughtiest and coldest state. As indifferent as if all passion, feeling, and interest had been worn out in the earlier ages of the world, and had perished from its surface with its other departed monsters. Mercury has announced Mr. Rouncewell, which is the cause of her appearance. Mr. Rouncewell is not in the library, but she repairs to the library. Sir Leicester is there, and she wishes to speak to him first. Sir Leicester, I am desirous, but you are engaged. Oh, dear no. Not at all. Only Mr. Tulkinghorn. Always at hand. Haunting every place. No relief or security from him for a moment. I beg your pardon, Lady Dedlock. Will you allow me to retire? With a look that plainly says, you know you have the power, to remain if you will, she tells him it is not necessary, and moves towards a chair. Mr. Tulkinghorn brings it a little forward for her with his clumsy bow, and retires into a window opposite. Interposed between her, and the fading light of day in the now quiet street, his shadow falls upon her, and he darkens all before her. Even so does he darken her life. It is a dull street under the best conditions, where the two long rows of houses stare at each other with that severity, that half a dozen of its greatest mansions, seem to have been slowly stared into stone, rather than originally built in that material. It is a street of such dismal grandeur, so determined not to condescend to liveliness, that the doors and windows hold a gloomy state of their own in black paint and dust, and the echoing mews behind have a dry and massive appearance, as if they were reserved to stable the stone chargers of noble statues. Complicated garnish of ironwork entwines itself over the flights of steps in this awful street, and from these petrified bowers, extinguishers for obsolete flambeau gasp at the upstart gas. Here and there a weak little iron hoop, through which bold boys aspire to throw their friends' caps, its only present use, retains its place among the rusty foliage, sacred to the memory of departed oil. Nay, even oil itself, yet lingering at long intervals in a little absurd glass pot, with a knob in the bottom like an oyster, blinks and sulks at newer lights every night, like its high and dry master in the House of Lords. Therefore there is not much that Lady Dedlock, seated in her chair, could wish to see through the window in which Mr. Tulkinghorn stands. And yet she sends a look in that direction, as if it were her heart's desire to have that figure moved out of the way. Sir Leicester begs his lady's pardon. She was about to say? Only that Mr. Rouncewell is here, he has called by my appointment, and that we had better make an end of the question of that girl. I am tired to death of the matter. What can I do to assist? demands Sir Leicester in some considerable doubt. Let us see him here, and have done with it. Will you tell him to send him up? Mr. Tulkinghorn, be so good as to ring. Thank you. Request, says Sir Leicester to Mercury, not immediately remembering the business term, request the Iron Gentleman to walk this way. Mercury departs in search of the Iron Gentleman, finds, and produces him. Sir Leicester receives that ferruginous person graciously. I hope you are well, Mr. Rouncewell. Be seated. My solicitor, Mr. Tulkinghorn. My lady was desirous, Mr. Rouncewell, Sir Leicester skillfully transfers him with a solemn wave of his hand, was desirous to speak with you. Hem. I shall be very happy, returns the Iron Gentleman, to give my best attention to anything Lady Dedlock does me the honor to say. As he turns towards her, he finds that the impression she makes upon him is less agreeable than on the former occasion. A distant supercilious air makes a cold atmosphere about her, and there is nothing in her bearing, as there was before, to encourage openness. Pray, sir, says Lady Dedlock listlessly, may I be allowed to inquire whether anything has passed between you and your son respecting your son's fancy? It is almost too troublesome to her languid eyes to bestow a look upon him as she asks this question. If my memory serves me, Lady Dedlock, I said, when I had the pleasure of seeing you before, that I should seriously advise my son to conquer that fancy. The Iron Master repeats her expression with a little emphasis. And did you? Oh, of course I did. Sir Leicester gives a nod, approving and confirmatory. Very proper. The Iron Gentleman, having said that he would do it, was bound to do it. No difference in this respect between the base metals and the precious. Highly proper. And pray has he done so? Really, Lady Dedlock, I cannot make you a definite reply. I fear not. Probably not yet. In our condition of life, we sometimes couple an intention with our fancies which renders them not altogether easy to throw off. I think it is rather our way to be in earnest. Sir Leicester has a misgiving that there may be a hidden Wattylerish meaning in this expression, and fumes a little. Mr. Rouncewell is perfectly good-humored and polite, but within such limits, evidently adapts his tone to his reception. Because, proceeds my lady, I have been thinking of the subject, which is tiresome to me. I am very sorry, I am sure. And also of what Sir Leicester said upon it, in which I quite concur. Sir Leicester flattered, and if you cannot give us the assurance that this fancy is at an end, I have come to the conclusion that the girl had better leave me. I can give no such assurance, Lady Dedlock. Nothing of the kind. Then she had better go. Excuse me, my lady, Sir Leicester considerately interposes, but perhaps this may be doing an injury to the young woman which she has not merited. Here is a young woman, says Sir Leicester, magnificently laying out the matter with his right hand like a service of plate, whose good fortune it is to have attracted the notice and favor of an eminent lady and to live, under the protection of that eminent lady, surrounded by the various advantages which such a position confers, and which are unquestionably very great, I believe unquestionably very great, sir, for a young woman in that station of life. The question then arises, should that young woman be deprived of these many advantages, and that good fortune simply because she has Sir Leicester, with an apologetic, but dignified inclination of his head towards the Iron Master, winds up his sentence, has attracted the notice of Mr. Rouncewell's son? Now, has she deserved this punishment? Is this just towards her? Is this our previous understanding? I beg your pardon, interposes Mr. Rouncewell's son's father. Sir Leicester, will you allow me? I think I may shorten the subject. Pray dismiss that from your consideration. If you remember anything so unimportant which is not to be expected, you would recollect that my first thought in the affair was directly opposed to her remaining here. Dismiss the Dedlock patronage from consideration? Oh! Sir Leicester is bound, To believe a pair of ears that have been added. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.